Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
2 years ago, it became the most infamous street corner in America.
Come, George Floyd!
Now George Floyd Square is a place of reflection and prayer.
There's a song you used to sing before you lost everything. Don't let those floodwaters take your song away.
That song is coming your way, courtesy of Bill and Kate Isles, who've been riding out the pandemic and beyond, if it's anywhere near over, with weekly online concerts. Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
Don't go down by the bridge. Stay up.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
There's a song you used to sing before you lost everything. Don't let those floodwaters take your song away.
That song is coming your way, courtesy of Bill and Kate Isles, who've been riding out the pandemic and beyond, if it's anywhere near over, with weekly online concerts. We'll catch up with them shortly. But first, 2 years ago, it became the most infamous street corner in America.
Come, George Floyd!
Now George Floyd Square is a place of reflection and prayer.
God needs you. He needs your testimony. I'm not going to let you go.
Also, a longtime Superior activist shares her thoughts on how far the nation has come on race relations in the first year after Floyd's death. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. 2 years ago this week, in the time it took to upload a video, the Minneapolis intersection of Chicago Avenue and East 38th Street became the most recognizable and infamous street corner in the world. It's the spot in front of Cup Foods where George Floyd breathed his last, his pleas heard by onlookers and eventually everyone in the world, yet ignored by the police officers pinning him down. Following his death at this site were the sounds of protests, then violence and destruction, from which South Minneapolis and many other areas have not yet fully recovered. Nor has the nation fully addressed the racial reckoning sparked by the murder. But there is hope, at least tentatively so, following the unprecedented conviction of former police officer Derek Chauvin. It's visible in the faces of many visiting the site, now named George Floyd Square. A year ago, on the first anniversary of George Floyd's death, I was among them, on the streets then closed to traffic for two blocks in all directions. Here's a rebroadcast of my report from then, followed by an update this week. A sea of humanity is passing by here, beneath the portrait with the giant face of George Floyd. On the blacktop in front of it, red and green letters demand justice for Dante Wright, the young black man shot to death just 10 miles away from the courthouse where Chauvin was being tried by a police officer claiming to have mistaken her gun for a taser. Sitting on a stoop is Tony Smith, an area resident who's collecting money for sleeping bags for homeless people. I stopped to ask his thoughts.
1 year later, how far have we come?
Quite a ways. This here opened up a lot of people's eyes, not only here in Minneapolis, but all the way around the world. They finally really realized and seeing what's going on, not only in the community, but in the police force as well. Mm-hmm. They've been getting away with it for a long period of time. Now it's catching up with them, not only here in Minnesota, but other states as well. And, you know, we don't need stuff like that. But I look back, that's the city's fault from not doing a thorough investigation into their hiring process.
On the corner is Cup Foods, the convenience store where George Floyd is alleged to have passed a counterfeit $20 bill that began the incident and that reportedly was never collected as evidence. The store is doing a brisk business, but off to the side, Butchie Austin may be cutting into their soft drink sales.
Want something to drink?
He's a resident of the immediate neighborhood, handing out bottles of water and pop for free to whoever wants one. He also offers his opinions.
We're here a year later because we're still looking for justice to be served. And I know that we got the... You're welcome. We know that the Derek Chauvin trial got us, you know, progress with accountability with Derek Chauvin. But
right, there was a conviction.
In reality, there's a lot more that we're trying to achieve. We, as a community, have decided there needs to be restorative justice in this area, and that is because the city killed a man. And so the city needs to be responsible, not the city, but the state and the county and anybody, other governing bodies that contributed to the injustice that was done here to George Floyd.
Do you think we have gotten the answers, that we'll ever have the answer of exactly what happened? We know the prosecution concentrated on Chauvin's acts, and that these were acts that were murder. It, you know, they caused the death. But what got us to that place in the first place? If you look at it largely, society or the actual, you know, individual?
It is, policing in America is out of control. And anyone who believes anything different has got a veil over their eyes and is choosing not to see what has been perpetually wrong since the inception of policing. And I mean, most people know that, you know, policing in its inception was designed to help control the runaway slave population. And here, fast forward, here we are 400 years later, and trying to turn policing into this quote-unquote public safety or law enforcement. And you know, frankly, it's built on really poor foundations. And so there's issues that that are deeper than just a bad cop taking a man's life. There's where the system is designed to recruit and to elevate and even sometimes praise behavior that is not consistent with what people would believe is serving, protecting.
Officer Lane, he was 4 days on the force.
Absolutely.
And within 20 seconds, he pulls the gun
and he's yelling expletives at, you know, and it's supposed to be you're innocent until proven guilty, due process, all the things that they say. But in this situation, we saw it on video where, no, he ran up on George Floyd with the gun pulled and yelling expletives, and that's not a way to serve your community. And it's not as mean as community. I mean, that's the other part, too. It is like, Officer Lane does not live here. So,
also chatting with Butchie Austin and then watching the outdoor church service are Ruth and Samuel Mallari. They're married, she's white and he's black, and residents of the neighborhood a couple of miles away. They also stop at the memorial in the center of the square, festooned with flowers, along with signs and pictures of others shot by police or taken before their time. One of them hits close to home.
The one little section over there is a memorial to Imez, right? He was a childhood friend of our daughter.
Yeah. You think we'll ever have the answer?
I asked them the same question, exactly, if they thought the details beyond the actual killing would ever be revealed.
You know, in my mind, from the very beginning, I have thought that something more was behind. I mean, for four cops to be needed to deal with a $20 counterfeit, maybe. So there was something, it seemed sort of, I don't know, premeditated almost. I don't know.
But I think some good things are going to come out of this, you know, if they really do their job and go back and do a different training and hold those who do things responsible. I think that will help for them to think twice before they do something bad, you know, so.
And this is him, you know, that's I'm always the more pessimistic one, unfortunately. But I think, you know, unless white people, like white people need to acknowledge that there really is systemic racism, and it might not be my personal fault, but to keep pretending like there's nothing there is just like that is a barrier to moving forward. A lot of people in my rural area where I grew up, I didn't do anything to you, I don't know why you're taking this out, you know, and or to use the term privilege, people don't like to hear that because I didn't have anything growing up. Right, but you don't have to worry about being dead at the end of a traffic stop. So I actually am hopeful. But maybe he's more hopeful than I am.
Okay. Nicole Etta of Minneapolis shares that guarded optimism.
I would say we have a lot more ways to go, but I love how every community is being supportive of the Black community right now. I love how the state of Minnesota hasn't taken this down. They let it stay a sacred spot. So that's showing a lot of progress in itself. But we still have a long ways to go. But progress is being made.
Her main purpose in coming was bringing her friend, Kingsley Dewana of North Dakota, and paying their respect.
I just wanted him to see it before he goes back home.
Well, we are just here to pay tribute to Judge Floyd, because me, for once, I haven't been here since he was killed. So my girlfriend took me here so we could come see this. It's like a memory. It's like a memory for his memory, yeah.
Come on! It's your day! It's your time! You don't have to spend another sleepless night! Come on, come on, come on! We're delivered and waiting on you! God needs you! He needs your testimony! I'm not gonna let you go! Bless God, as long as I'm on this corner, I'm gonna continue to pray!
The racial reckoning a year after George Floyd's death is also being examined here at home. One of the strongest voices is that of Superior's Kim Young. She joins me now from her home in Superior. Welcome to Simply Superior.
Thank you.
So how far have we come?
Well, I agree with several of our leaders in the Black community to where this one incident of George Floyd has made more impact on the fight for social justice and police reform than the riots back when Rodney King verdict came down. On the other hand, it's complicated things because we now have a political administration that is doing damn good lip service to the cause of social justice and racial equality, but we have yet to see some definitive on the ground, move it forward, action come out of this administration. And I know it's going to take a minute. Our voting rights are under attack again. Our constitutional rights are under attack. Our very way of life is in a crucible right now that is teetering on the brink of change or falling into the abyss that we will never return from. I don't want to see that, but I fear that that will take place before things truly take a turn for the better. I hope and I pray not. Mm-hmm. I hope and I pray not, because I am tired of fighting. You know, my mind is tired. My heart is heavy, and I want some peace, but I will not purchase that peace on the cost of one more life.
And you said that last year at one of the rallies, the biggest one in the area, your direct quote was, "We are done dying."
We are. We have to be.
I want to take a listen to that again. This is from the biggest rally in the Twin Ports in early June, shortly after the death of George Floyd.
My name is Kim Young, and I'm an elder in the African Heritage community here. I want every white person right now to raise your hand. Do Black lives matter to you?
Yes!
Then you need to tear down the racist system that perpetuates the racism and systemic oppression. We are standing here today for justice for George and every other Black name on the list that has been killed by police brutality, by police misconduct, by police bullets. Where we stand with signs in front of them while white armed men storm capitals and go home to their families. Don't let them take our movement. Don't let them take our power. And you ain't gonna take our lives no more, because we are done dying.
We just heard from Superior activist Kim Young at the biggest rally in the Twin Ports shortly following the death of George Floyd. Kim joins us by phone from her home in Superior. Are there any actions you suggest need to be taken specific to Northwest Wisconsin and Northeast Minnesota?
Police reform in the Duluth Superior, both departments. Training, it needs to be seriously looked at by the community and its leaders and our political figures. That needs to be addressed. Less lethal uses of force, no chokeholds. We need to demilitarize our police departments. They don't need to have military-grade weapons to do what? To kill Americans on American soil? No. We have to make some changes, or else we are not going to make it.
Although the police reform issues very much affect African Americans and Native Americans, a lot of what you're saying affects everybody.
It's everybody, because we are all culpable in it. At this day and age, knowing what we have known for 400 years, what we have endured, what we have experienced, we cannot sit back and let anybody else decide our fate in the social justice arena. In the global world, we can no longer allow our lives, our livelihoods, our education, and our experience to be glossed over, whitewashed, and used against us to quell us from rising up and speaking up. Can't do it.
Kim Young, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me today, Robin.
That was my conversation a year ago on the first anniversary of the death of George Floyd with Kim Young of Superior, preceded by a visit to George Floyd Square in Minneapolis. Now, an update on what's transpired in the last year. We're joined by Harry Colbert. He's the managing editor of MinnPost, based in the Twin Cities. Welcome to Simply Superior, Harry.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me.
So, briefly, what have been some of the updates in the case since last year when the major news was the conviction of Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd in the state's criminal case? Thomas Lane, one of the other officers involved, has recently entered a plea?
Yeah, in the state case. Now, the three other officers involved were tried in the federal violation of George Floyd's civil rights, and they were all convicted. In the state case, Officer Lane entered into a plea saying that he was guilty of negligence in knowing that George Floyd should have been rolled on his side as he was trained in the academy, that he knew better. He knew that what Officer Derek Chauvin was doing was harmful to George Floyd.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that all the former officers, Lane, Chauvin, as well as J. Alexander Kuhn and Tu Tao, were found guilty in the federal civil rights case. The state trial of Kuhn and Tao is still to come?
Still to come in June, yes. So we don't know if they are in talks or negotiations for pleas in those remaining cases. But we talked to Attorney General Keith Ellison in April, and at that time he said that the state was proceeding with its case and those officers would go to state trial in June.
Mm-hmm. For the anniversary this week, President Biden marked it by signing a bill on police reform. What are the highlights?
Okay. Basically, all federal law enforcement officers, and that's about 1,000, they'd be subject to a registry. And this registry would be from areas all across the nation where if an officer has been either fired for misconduct or has sustained several complaints of misconduct, they would have to register, and then that registry would be shared nationwide. So that's one of the highlights. And also, one of the other provisions of the executive order was it would restrict the use of no-knock entries by federal law enforcement officers. And we know that no-knock has been prevalent in the news here in the Twin Cities with the February 2nd killing of Amir Locke in a tragic no-knock warrant that was executed. And Amir Locke was not the subject of that warrant.
Right. Well, back at George Floyd Square, since our report last year, it's been reopened to traffic, but it's still a gathering place. What sort of anniversary events took place this year and maybe still happening?
Well, recently, many people have seen that movie director Spike Lee was in town and he visited the plaza just a couple of days ago. The plaza is back open to traffic, and where it was a free-flowing intersection, now it's sort of a roundabout with a giant raised fist sculpture in the middle. And there's a lot of artwork. I hesitate to call it graffiti, but a lot of artwork that is all about the 38th and Chicago area where George Floyd lost his life. And people are flocking to that area. And I would say not as an attraction, but more so to pay their respects to a person who was so tragically killed there on May the 25th of 2020.
Right, as the pilgrimage. We've been speaking with Harry Colbert. He's the managing editor of Men Post, based in the Twin Cities. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up, Bill and Kate Isles tell us about their weekly online concerts.
In worn out pages, there were cut out pictures.
For a few stolen hours.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. For the last 2 years, singer-songwriter duo Bill and Kate Isles have been streaming into your living room or mobile device with weekly online concerts. Before that, they appeared on our show, and a year ago, they joined us again to tell us what they've been up to. Here's our broadcast from then. Welcome back to Simply Superior, Bill and Kate, or I should say, Kate and Bill Isles.
Thank you, Robin. I love that. I introduce us the same way, so appreciate that.
Oh, no, I introduce us from the artist's point of view. I'm on the left, she's on the right. So Bill and Kate Isles. But she's introducing us from the audience's point of view, which is Kate and Bill Isles.
That's a pretty good answer. But I'm going to challenge you once more on that. For the online shows, your left is always somebody else's right, and nobody could ever figure it out when you're doing a Zoom and they say, okay, let's go to the person down the right. And that takes up another 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So what have you been doing for the last year?
Well, Kate is working full-time at Miller Hill Subaru since November. Mm-hmm. And I did a big project at our cabin last summer. I put in well and septic. And so now we have a bathroom and a kitchen there. And it was fun to do.
Oh, there's the key word, fun. You know, this might be one of the few silver linings to what is, in all seriousness, a terrible event the last year and a half. So did you write any songs about your construction?
No, I don't write songs when I'm working on stuff. And that's been a problem. So I said this spring, this spring, we're not going to start any projects until I finish 3 songs. And I got 2 of them done. You know, 1 more to go. And then I'll be waiting for the 2x4 prices to come down.
Well, I'm going to ask you about those songs in a minute. But Kate, what about you? On a slow day at the dealership, you know, I can imagine in the middle of January, nobody's coming in. Although, I don't know, you got President's Day. Well, then last February, right? But anyway, has it led to any inspiration for you?
Yeah, well, at the dealership, it's a new, completely new world for me. So I've been adjusting and I've really been enjoying it in a lot of ways. As far as music goes, I have to say that working a full-time job at a car dealership has made me more excited or interested in being creative outside of the 40-hour work week. And so on Monday night, when we pick up our guitars and we have our friends online with us, we love it. And we really look forward to our Monday night.
All right.
For the first 4 years that we knew each other, Kate worked full-time. And then she went to part-time and was more involved in music. This is the first full-time job in our family since 2005.
Mm-hmm. Do I recall correctly, Kate, that was in wine sales?
I was, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is more inspiring for songwriting, wine sales or car sales?
I have to say they're both jobs that I take seriously and I want to do well at the job. But I think, oh my goodness, I feel the need to be creative outside of those full-time jobs. And so, but then to get to that point and really do it and have downtime and quiet time and alone time can be pretty challenging. So I'm very far behind in my songwriting as well, unfortunately.
All right. And we're going to keep the Monday nights for the foreseeable future, or?
Yeah, we don't have any plans to change. We have a studio set up in our basement now, and everything's all dialed in, and we just go down there and turn it on and say hi to everybody.
Well, you're speaking to me in my studio in my basement, so there we go. It's the new normal. We are speaking with Kate and Bill Iles of Duluth, a singer-songwriter duo. Or if you're looking at them online and your left is my right, then it's Bill and Kate Iles. So it works either way. Are there any particular songs from your previous repertoire that you found really work for what we've been going through for the last year?
Floodwaters is probably a major one. Yeah. It's why, you know, don't go down by the bridge, stay up high on the ridge. Don't let those floodwaters carry you away.
There's and, a song you used to sing before you lost everything. Don't let those floodwaters take your song away.
Yeah. And that was last year, last spring, after we talked to you, a random group of Northwoods musicians, kind of headed by Timothy Sodengroves, took our song Floodwaters and made a collaborative video of it. They took our structure of our song and then replaced everything with other people playing instruments and other people doing the verse. So we did one half of a verse ourselves, but everybody else took their parts. And it was just a wonderful collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also quite seriously sounds like it's something that, again, we would not have thought of a year and a half ago, right? Until everybody figured out exactly how to do this music syncing online and all. Now that's become a thing, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hear Floodwaters by Bill and Kate Iles, accompanied by musical friends.
Don't go down by the bridge. Stay up high on the ridge. Don't let those floodwaters carry you away. There's a song you used to sing before you lost everything. Don't let those floodwaters take your song. Down by the bridge, stay up high on the ridge. Don't let those floodwaters carry you away. There's a song you used to sing before you lost everything. Don't let those floodwaters take your song away.
Memories you kept in frame, things you thought would never change.
Your morning light was never said, now it's washed along the riverbed. Don't go down by the bridge, stay up high on the ridge. Don't let those floodwaters carry you away. Song away. Song you used to sing before you lost everything. Don't let those
And that was Floodwaters by our guests, Kate and Bill Isles, and not quite a cast of thousands, but close. So now that you're able to go somewhere, what's on the concert tour schedule, or is there one yet?
There's no tour schedule because Kate's working full-time, and that's the interesting thing about what we've been through is we slowly eased our way
into
a lifestyle of doing music full-time. And then we'd also have other side businesses that we were involved with that didn't require us to be here all the time. But now it's just shut down. So now we're going back into it. I don't know how we could ever get back into the 150, 160 show a year, 50,000 mile driving tour thing. I just don't see that ever happening again because it took years to develop that touring and that circuit. Mm-hmm. And those venues aren't necessarily there anymore. You know, and you have to travel to make a living as a musician. You can't, unless you're hired by a school or something, but you really have a hard time making a living at it locally because there just aren't a lot of high-paying gigs. They're wonderful gigs, but they just don't have the budget.
Mm-hmm. Which is no reflection on our local music fans.
Not at all. And those good-paying gigs are here for touring musicians to come through and once in a year.
Right.
But local people don't get... You know, you don't play locally for money. You play locally for exposure.
Community.
And to entertain people. And it's close by home. You don't have to stay overnight anywhere.
And do understand, of course, we have gigs that we've done in Duluth that we absolutely love. And they treat us wonderfully. And they feed us. And we have a great time.
Oh, yes. So wonderful. Where else can you go? You go out and play music for 3 hours, which is playing. It's fun. Mm-hmm. And you get a great meal afterwards. And you get paid besides. And you don't have to drive 6 hours each way to do the gig and wonder what you're going to do with your dogs. The only way you can make a living at it is if you've worked 6 nights a week. And that's just not, we have most of our gigs this summer. We're playing once a month at each of the venues.
What other songs would you like to highlight and tell us something about?
Well, probably Hobos in the Roundhouse, I would think, because that's our most well-known song. Although we probably featured that last time we did a show with you.
So you know what? So, I was thinking about that, and it occurred to me that, our listeners probably aren't as in tune as you and I are of what exactly we played a year ago, right? I mean, I hope the listeners are really taking notes like that. And then even if they are, well, if this is your big hit, they probably want to hear it again, you know? So.
Yeah, it's in the folk world, it's a big hit for us. In fact, the royalties for this song paid for our house.
Ah.
Well, for 2 weeks.
So tell us about it again. Because, see, even I, with the memory that, yes, we did play it before, I don't remember the entire story, although I thought it had something to do with Wisconsin.
Well, it mentions Prairie du Chien.
There we go.
So my grandfather was a night foreman for the DWP Roundhouse up in Virginia, Minnesota. And... I learned from a cousin a bunch of years ago that he used to sneak the hobos in at night, even though he could have gotten fired for doing that. And I like to write about what I know. And I didn't know that much about hobos until I heard this story that actually was a very important part of our family history. And it's been recorded by 8 or 9 other groups now. And it's probably about 80 artists that do it.
And how did you work Prairie du Chien in there?
Well, I was talking about the hobos in the song. I said, from Akron, which is where I heard the story, in Akron, Ohio, and Hinckley, which is a railroad town in Minnesota, and Prairie du Chien, which is a railroad town in Wisconsin. So I picked 3 railroad towns. And I picked Prairie du Chien because it rhymed with, and they're soldiers and lawyers, and I believe what they're saying.
All right, sounds close enough to me. Let's hear Hobos in a Roundhouse by, in this one, I'm going to say Bill and Kate Isles, since he wrote it.
From 7 to 7, every night of the week, fixing trains in the roundhouse, I work on my feet. And I told my children, I hope the bed bugs don't bite. And I got hobos sleeping in the roundhouse. Akron and Hinckley, contrary to shame. They are soldiers and lawyers, and I believe what they're saying. And I'll rouse them at four, and they'll head down the line. My hobo's sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. Good night, my hobos, rest your vagabond heads. On your old knapsack pillows, in your gunny sack beds. For a few stolen hours, you'll be alright. My hobo's sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. Well, they hired a new man work as a guard. Every morning at sunrise, he checks out the yard. But for now, I won't trust him, though he seems pretty nice. 'Cause I got hobos sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. Good night, my hobos, rest your vagabond heads. On your old knapsack pillows, in your gunny sack beds. For a few stolen hours, you'll be all my hobo's sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. Well, I ask my savior, what should I do? If I'm caught helping hobos, my job could be through. And I heard the answer so clear and so bright. Are my hobos sleeping in your roundhouse tonight? Good night, my hobos, rest your vagabond heads. On your old knapsack pillows, in your gunny sack beds. For a few stolen hours, you'll be all right. My hobo's sleeping in the roundhouse tonight. For a few stolen hours, you'll be all right. My hobo's sleeping in the roundhouse. Good night, boys.
And that's Hobos in the Roundhouse by Bill and Kate Isles. The next one is going to be by Kate and Bill Isles, because I'm going to ask Kate, can you recommend one to take out the segment?
I think it would probably be Little Blue. It's a song that came about when my mother, who was an oil painter, she asked which painting of hers I would like, and I said I would love Little Blue. It's a small landscape where my mother and my cousin Mary were plein air painting along the Little Blue River in Nebraska. And actually, I was sitting in front of it one day with my guitar, and I started picking a pattern on my guitar, and that became the song Little Blue.
All right. We've been speaking with Bill and Kate Isles, a.k.a. Kate and Bill Isles, depending on which way you're looking at them on your screen. You can see them on your screen on Facebook Live on Monday nights. Isles is spelled I-S-L-E-S. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Robin.
Take care.
And that was our interview a year ago with Bill and Kate Isles.
They'll be appearing tomorrow, Saturday, at Bent Pato in Duluth at 7 p.m. Coming up, the regional news and review.
Nebraska plains and grandma's hands. Little blue.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Rick Lovers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Rick, the country is really in a state of shock when just days after the supermarket shootings in Buffalo, we saw a gunman open fire at a school in Texas, killing more than 20 people, most of them small children. What's the local reaction been?
Yes, there are a lot of heavy hearts in the Northland as a result of this horrific news. Several school districts in the Duluth area asked for larger law enforcement presence this week, and a few asked staff to double-check measures that were already in place, such as magnets on security doors. Most middle and high schools in the area already have a school resource police officer stationed there, but school district leaders said officers were set to patrol past schools more often this week so that they could be noticed more readily and be on hand more speedily. Superior School District Administrator Amy Starzecki said that these officers are to be visible and help reassure family and staff that they're present and around. Wayne Whitman, the superintendent at Hermantown Community School, said that the plan there was to have as normal of a day as possible on Wednesday and going forward. John Engelking, who's the superintendent at Proctor Public Schools, as well as other district leaders, sent letters to parents and staff offering reassurance of their security measures.
And the area also had observances in memory of those killed both in Buffalo and in Texas. One observance that we'll hear from at the end of this program. Well, in certainly less heartrending matters, in Two Harbors, the proposed recall of the mayor is back on. Yes?
Yes, it is. The Two Harbors City Council voted to recall Mayor Chris Swanson on Monday. This followed a tense hour-long meeting in which the council voted 6-1 to call for a recall of Swanson, with only Swanson voting no. The embattled mayor now has until the end of the month to resign. If he does not, a recall election will be held in August. This move comes after the second recall petition submitted by hundreds of Two Harbors voters was certified by city administration last week. The recall effort was spurred by Swanson's underwater hotel and cryptocurrency pursuits and other potential conflicts of interest and ethical concerns coming to light. In a March memo of opinion, City Attorney Tim Costley wrote that Swanson repeatedly used his official city position for personal benefit or business interest, violating both the city's communication policy and city code. But on Monday, Swanson said there had not been one allegation that had been proven against him and dismissed Costley's findings as issues with the communication policy. He then read directly from the amended lawsuit filed last week seeking to nullify the recall and stating that it was unclear exactly what the recall process was. This lawsuit was filed by Tim Jezierski, who's the chair of the Lake County Republicans, along with a Jane and John Doe against the city of Two Harbors and organizers of the resign or recall effort. The lawsuit claims the recall effort erred because it failed to follow Minnesota's process to recall a state official. However, Swanson is a city employee. A hearing on the lawsuit is expected soon. Now, again, Swanson has until 4:30 on Tuesday, May 31st, to resign. If he does not, a recall election will be held August 9th, in which voters can say yes or no on whether they think Swanson should remain in office.
Well, moving down from Two Harbors to the harbors of Duluth and Superior, the shipping season is in full swing, or is it?
Well, it's a bit sluggish at the moment. The first full month of seasonal shipping totals in the Twin Ports dipped considerably compared to the same month a season ago. Iron ore through the Great Lakes was down nearly 45%, totaling 3 million tons. That's a figure that was 41% worse than the five-year average. The Port of Duluth Superior made up 2.43 million short tons of ore in April after seeing only three ore boats start the season in the last week of March. That total was 38% below the start of last season and 27% off five-year averages. Similar dips in output were recorded at ports in Silver Bay and Two Harbors. Industry leaders are blaming a difficult ice out in March and April, specifically with ice buildup and delays in Whitefish Bay on the eastern end of Lake Superior. The industry used the dip in output to once again advocate for another heavy U.S. icebreaker to join the Mackinac on the Great Lakes. However, on a positive note, grain exports from U.S. ports are in strong demand, along with shipments of salt, steel, and containers. Shipping officials noted that there are unusual factors that continue to affect the world of cargo transportation, including ongoing global supply chain delays and the war in Ukraine.
Well, Danny, the ships need water to get through. Is there enough on the lake?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers just came out with their latest six-month outlook. Water levels will remain high on most of the Great Lakes, except for Lake Superior. But even though levels are going to be higher on most lakes, they're still going to be nowhere near the record highs that we have seen in recent years. And if you remember, water levels on Lakes Michigan and Huron reached a record high in 2020, and in 2019, Superior also set a record high because we were really coming off of some pretty wet conditions. In fact, 2019 was the wettest year on record for the Midwest and Wisconsin since record keeping began. You know, in the last 18 months or so, we've seen levels come down somewhat, but, you know, Lake Superior is the only one that is going to be pretty much around the long-term average. But even so, the lake has only received around 88% of its average precipitation in the last year. As for Lakes Michigan and Huron, they're about 2 feet below record highs that they saw in 2020.
Well, concerning smaller bodies of water, the spearfishing tradition continues among the Lac du Flambeau tribe.
That's right, Robin. Spearfishing is a tradition that's practiced every spring by Ojibwe tribes in northern Wisconsin, and it's been passed on for generations. You know, it's part of tribal rights to hunt, fish, and gather on land ceded to the U.S. government under federal treaties that were reached nearly 200 years ago. And I went out with a group from the Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa earlier this month as they were teaching tribal youth the time-honored tradition. And so, you know, Lac du Flambeau actually gets its name from the practice of spearfishing. When the French came to the region, they called it Lac du Flambeau, which is Lake of the Torches. In Ojibwe, it's called Waswagani. Tribal president John Johnson Sr. says means Lake of the Fire. And for hundreds of years, tribal members have harvested fish by torchlight in birch bark canoes at night. And these practices, again, were upheld by tribal treaty rights. But that doesn't mean that the state has always recognized them. In fact, a little more than 30 years ago, hundreds of non-native people harassed tribal spearfishers at boat landings in northern Wisconsin. They hurled rocks and racist remarks. Basically, they protested the tribe's ability to hunt, fish, and gather on off-reservation lands that they ceded to the federal government. While there was no trouble on the night that I went out, the tribal president says not all people know or understand these rights. He said that they don't realize that this is food that they utilize to support their community, which has been growing over the years. And so they took out a number of tribal youth, I believe it was around 20 kids, and they were able to collect about 25 fish per permit. And when they came back to shore, they counted the walleye and measured them to comply with tribal regulations. And, you know, the typical harvest for tribal spearfishers on off-reservation lakes ranges between 30,000 to 40,000 walleye each year, according to state regulators. And in comparison, state anglers harvest about five times as many fish, with more than 200,000 walleye taken from the same lake each year. And so this was really an opportunity for the tribe to pass on this tradition to tribal youth in the hopes that they will also learn and practice this tradition for years to come and pass that on to future generations.
All right. We've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with sounds of a memorial Wednesday night at Peace United Church of Christ in Duluth to the victims of Uvalde, Texas, and Buffalo. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.